So maybe I'll open with a question. So the Buddha described his teaching. You know, he didn't use the word Buddhism. He used a lot of different words, but one of them was the word Dhamma Vinaya. Mm-hmm. Can you maybe explain why it wasn't just Dhamma? Or what that term means?
Yeah. No, I think it's quite important to take note of that, in the sense that it's a Dhamma Vinaya as a description of what he taught or what he saw as his legacy, and so both the teaching and the training, and recognizing that it's not just a theoretical teaching or a philosophical view on life or on religion. These go together, so that the Dhamma being that sense of a teaching that is pointing toward truth, and then Vinaya being boundaries of conduct and practice because it's also, I think, over time then Vinaya has been assumed to be specifically monastic, but it's, I think, during the early days of the Buddha's teachings, a Vinaya is a standard of conduct that was applicable for both the lay community and the monastic community. It's also interesting that there's and that's quite clear in Prapayuto's Buddha Dhamma, that great magnum opus, that he divides it into two. And I don't know if it's a canonical term or if it's a or it's a later term, but there's the Majjhima Patipatthā, so the middle way of practice, and Majjhena Dhammadesana, so like the middle way of teaching and the middle way of practicing. So that sense of there being these approaches of a middle way, and the Dhamma Vinaya is a very old term that points to that. So that recognizing, and the same similarity when we recollect the qualities of the Buddha himself, and these are when we think of what the Buddha as a refuge, and what do we take refuge in? In Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and thinking of the qualities that we take refuge in, one of those qualities is vicaccharana sampanno, so that being full, replete in both knowledge and conduct, and that is very important. So that's where that both the Dhamma and Vinaya start to work together and function together to create this sense or lay a foundation for us to be able to access that vicaccharana sampanno. So it's a quality that we can both emulate as well as try to embody.
So this way of conduct, I'm sure many of us find that it's different from on purpose. It's different from what we did before. Okay. As lay people. Yeah. And so, like, one thing that I've noticed about, like, myself, and I've heard you talk about it many times, is that many Westerners, we come to this training with, like, stubbornness and idealism, oftentimes working together. Yeah. But also, I can maybe also see how those qualities can also work and turn into something useful. And so, maybe also too, like, I'm thinking about, like, how in order to come to this training as Westerners, like, we oftentimes had to swim against the stream of the world, not follow the cultural conditions, not follow the authorities, not follow this normal train of life. And we show up here, and there's, like, there's so many rules, and there's so many, and it's so well established, and it's, how do we shift gears, or what, how do we navigate that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is that again when we think of the refuges of that ehi patiko, that come and see, you know, that invitation, so that the Buddha is, and I think that's one of the things that is inspiring to me in terms of, and what always was inspiring to me in the sense that the Buddha was confident enough in his training and the various guidelines and practices and that it was, yeah, in a sense, come and see, try this out. Look for yourself. See this for yourself. So that there's this confidence, I think, that as opposed to you've got to believe it. But if you don't try it out or give yourself to it, then you're missing the opportunity to take up the Buddha on his invitation. So that sense of okay, he says, come and see. Well, I need to give myself to it and see what actually does happen and then I think that's something that certainly Ajahn Chah and most of the teachers that I had contact with and lived under, there was never an authoritarian pushing you into it, but there was an uncompromising way of saying, if you really give this a chance, it's going to work. And so it's same end, a bit different means, I think that sense of recognizing that, we tend to be, we don't really have a precedent from our own, or similar precedent. From our own cultural background, so that it's really uncharted territory, and it's going to be uncomfortable. It's not really, the Buddha's not giving his teaching in order to make us comfortable and lull us to sleep in a different way. What he's trying to do is give us the tools that allows us to wake up and free ourselves from the things that really bind us to something that is not just our kind of our kind of neuroses and psychological pitfalls, but something far deeper than that binds us to the to the cycle of birth and death. And I mean, those aren't how do you say it? Those are not two different things. There is a need to be able to recognize when the mind is what's rebelling, what is hurt there, what is challenging, what's bringing up fear there, and how does that tie me into a deeper attachment to greed, hatred, delusion that is always going to bind me to dukkha. And so that's a being able, willingness to look at that and work with it and giving that training a chance in that sense of ehipasiko. I was like, okay, and that's where a certain element of faith or confidence is required, in that the especially I think for us as Westerners who have a very skeptical relationship with religion and authority, so that's where Ajahn Chah was really good at patience, be willing to be patient with us. It takes time to really understand.
And I'm just thinking, my next question was going to be around that, around faith. And how, and also I'm thinking about, in order to seek out this training and come here and stick with it long enough to take on the training, we do have a confidence or a faith in something.
Yeah.
And then how do we kind of bootstrap that into, or sort of expand that faith into these other qualities of training? Because we have something that we like.
Yeah, yeah. No, nobody'd be here if they didn't have that seed of faith and confidence. Lots of other things to be doing, and that are a lot more exciting or interesting. But we've been doing exciting and interesting already. So. I think that sense of looking at particular teachings that one finds really helpful. That's where taking a teaching like the Four Noble Truths and returning to it over and over, try to get different angles on it and see the applicability of it, and of course that gives a tremendous confidence or faith, or the conditionality. Seeing how what the Buddha is pointing to are these series of conditions and conditionality that take one in certain directions, and the inevitable conditioned nature of things, and dependent, so that dependent origination is that itta pachayata, and seeing those causal processes are, when we understand them, then we can inhabit them and live within them without being pulled down or getting confused by them. Because it isn't as if one is, it's just the way things work. So you're not going to stop that process, but you can understand it and work within it and be free from it in that way, in that one can make skillful choices. And so that the nature of karma and dependent arising and conditionality, those are important aspects to be investigating to get a sense of, because then one gets a sense of agency in that sense, not in terms of me, but in terms of this part of a process that I can understand, and I'm not just a helpless victim of, or a confused kind of a recipient of something that I don't have anything to do with. And you realize, oh no, this agency is, and that's where that kind of quality of faith can be coming from the aspect of the teachings. So that Four Noble Truths, Dependent Arising, the Iddha Paccayata, Kamma. So those are important aspects of the teaching to be paying attention to, but then also paying attention to the quality of the, I mean the Buddha obviously as as a refuge and as but the Buddha's 2,500 years ago and cloaked in mythology and hard for a lot of us to access. And it's not, as one continues to practice, and I think it really, that faith in the Buddha really grows. But that's in terms as we begin our practice, yeah, it's important to sort of be investigating the teachings and saying, oh, these come from a real person. Or one of the books that I found incredibly helpful is Nyanamoli's Life of the Buddha. Because, because he did a wonderful job in stripping back coming back to the suttas and a little bit of Vinaya, I think, as well, stories that are really primary sources and getting a sense of the Buddha as a human being and seeing the Buddha as a human being is quite essential. As opposed to a mythical figure. But then you've got various teachers, contemporary teachers that one here in America it's kind of definitely a bit of a distance, but there are books and resources around that one can recognize that. Okay, here's this kind of unbroken lineage, 2,500 years of practice that has resulted in beings who are quite exemplary human beings, and then that's where it also shifts from an abstract wisdom quality to wise and compassionate example of human existence, and again not abstract where. Kind of untouchable where, especially my own example of being, living close to Ajahn Chah and he both wise but very compassionate, sense of humor, also could be irritating. He was a human being, and then exemplifying qualities of patience or of just showing a being a good example for others, and taking the time to he always had time for people, whereas Ajahn Chah, certainly he didn't have. It was easy for him to he wouldn't put up with a lot of crap, but if one showed any kind of interest, he was really there for people. He always gave time to people, always willing to help. And I see that over and over again with somebody like Lopa Liam, who is I think by nature a very solitary person who is quite happy not dealing with people at all. But his just seeing over time the effect of his living the Dhamma, where he's still, you go to meet him and spend time with him, and he's kind of aloof, but he's actually there, and then you see what he actually does in his life. If you ask him, what he's doing, what his schedule is, it's sort of like, I don't do anything. I just eat and I sleep. But he's incredibly plugged in to helping and being there for people, both the monastics and the lay community, and he's taking the time to come here and give us encouragement, and he'll do that for others, and he does that in Thailand, and it's just this his ability to give. It's an incredible unselfishness. So that seeing that result of in the human condition and realm of somebody who practices, this is a direct result of Dhamma Vinaya, and there's faith arise that there's change is possible for all of us.
Two follow-up questions. Maybe start with the first one. So regarding paying attention to conditionality and karma and the Four Noble Truths and how it affects one, it sounds like also too, especially living in community with the Vinayas, some of that's about like taking responsibility for your actions and your mental states and how that affects other people. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's again, that's where. Vinaya is really helpful in because that's one of the images of Vinaya, is a thread that ties the practices together and all the qualities together, so that it's a thread that ties us together as human beings. And we interact, we have to relate. And then we start to see, because it's one thing sitting up at your kuti by yourself contemplating karma and conditionality, but it's much more immediate when somebody's doing something really irritating next to you, or you're doing something irritating to somebody else, and they let you know. So then those are very direct lessons in how that works and how to pull it off. Because again, when you're contemplating on an abstract level, then you know this is arise because of this, and you can figure it all out. But once you get dealing with, there's something. It's like that kind of. Once you add in more factors into an equation, then the level of chaos sort of increases, and just by having to live with other people, then there is a certain complexity that is quite natural, that arises, and conditionality is not just a linear thing anymore. It's Ajahn Jeff, that synchronic and diachronic are good. You're recognizing there's these two causal processes happening at the same time, and sometimes it's quite unpredictable. And how do we be present with that sense of unpredictability, and not be shaken by that, and how do we skillfully add something to an unpredictable situation? So that takes real wisdom and compassion. Those are those qualities of when we think of the qualities of the Buddha in terms of just that when we chant, recollecting the quality, Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava, and that or Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahanto Sama Sambuddhassa, those are pointing to qualities of wisdom, compassion, and purity. And those are the qualities we need to be. One, that it's a refuge externally to us, but it's a refuge that we have to create for ourselves, of a cultivation of wisdom, of compassion and purity, so that they rely on each other, they balance each other, they support each other, and then that's the basis of our living a holy life and experiencing the fruits of a holy life.
One more question. So, like both, like when you were describing like Lungpa Liam, and then also too with this the sensitivity towards others, like that kind of sensitivity doesn't come natural to me. I tend to pay attention to different things in my experience, and so I've really had to learn to like consciously cultivate being sensitive to things. Like if I imagine, you know, if I were to have met Lungpa Liam 10 years ago, I wouldn't have learned anything from him. But then just after monastic training for a little bit, I have a sensitivity to different things. And so part of my practice has been shifting the quality or the questions that I'm asking to these other things. Can you talk about like skillful means for doing that? Or
well, I think one is just that sense of recognizing that we do have a lot to learn, or we have this opportunity to learn a whole different way of relating and living as a human being, so then it's a challenge, or it's an opportunity, and then I think that's where, say, like with monastic training, is is giving, I mean, just the form gives us a, I mean, of course it gives us the opportunity for our cultivation of formal aspects of meditation and living a renunciant life. But it also gives us an opportunity for developing a, and I think it's something that we never conceived of when we first start, even contemplated taking on monastic training, is like a certain meticulousness to the material world around us, our requisites, the physical things that we, one in just caring for them or making our own requisites and or caring for the requisites that people give us. There's a mindfulness and attention to detail that we develop that, and once you start cultivating that, it starts bleeding over into, I mean, it bleeds over back, you know, say back into the mind itself, in terms of the mind actually is able to pay attention to objects of attention a bit better. But then also it bleeds into how we live with others, so that, and because there's an attention to detail in terms of proximity, it's like in within the monastic form and the vinaya training, an attention to and a giving respect to elders who are experienced, and so that paying attention to the looking after their helping them out, how one sits in relationship to them, how one walks in relationship to them. Those are an attention to detail in social interaction that helps us to become aware of each other and more sensitive to each other, as junior members, because you know, you're starting to pay attention in relational ways. And then it starts to help in not just in terms of a vertical way of the junior to senior, but in a horizontal way of the people we're interacting with, and it's really important. Okay, I think it's enough for one evening. I think there might be. Might be another evening or so. We'll go for an end. Yeah, and people have questions that pop up. Either let Suhajo know, or it's not just a discussion between myself and Suhajo. People are welcome to chime in and ask questions, but that's, I think, plant the seeds for this for the next little while. We can follow this through, see where it goes. Okay.